everyone, and welcome back to another exciting episode of the ECCTC podcast. I'm your host, Jeanette Wilson, and I'm excited to be joined today by Jamie Wagler, who has over 15 years' experience of working within early learning and childcare. She is known for her creative approach to professional development, her belief in the power of play for all ages, and her unwavering commitment to elevating the voices of both children and educators. She is the host of the Forgotten ECE podcast, as well as the creator and editor of Beyond the Bell, a resource designed to uplift and inspire school-age educators. Jamie is the supervisor of a licensed nursery school and two before and after school programs, and has taken time out of her busy schedule to talk about all things school age. Hi, Jamie. Thank you so much for joining me this afternoon. I'm so excited to be engaging in conversations around all things school-aged. It's lovely to be able to sit down and have a conversation with somebody who has a passion for school-aged children, all that advocation that you do for school-agers and school-age educators. So thank you for joining me this afternoon.
Thank you so much for having me. We talked a little before this, but I was so excited to come on here and talk because school age is my passion and I am literally beaming with everything school age. So this is going to be great.
Wonderful. So let's jump straight into our first question. So if we could kick off with a question around, maybe you could just share a little bit about your school age program, what it looks like, what it makes it unique to other programs.
Absolutely. That's a great question. So the school age programs that I run are this incredible, beautiful balance of freedom and structure, a place where kids can be themselves, explore their interests, and build real world experiences and skills through play and connection and curiosity. It's this meaningful extension of Children's Learning Day, a time to dig into their passions, a time to take ownership of their time, of the part of the day that they actually have control over. Because a lot of children that come to before and after school programs, they get up in the morning and they have to rush to before school. Then they have to spend all day in the class and all day at school. And then they come to after school and they're not going home sometimes till 6 o'clock at night, where they don't really get to pick what falls in that time. It's just being told what to do and where to go. So I celebrate mess and movement and these moments of magic that it can only happen in before and after school programs, because this is where children feel safe, seen, and valued.
Wonderful. So it sounds absolutely amazing place for the children to be, and so many things that you spoke to there. One key thing that stood out to me was that concept of ownership. And as you were saying, that during the school day or during Children's Day, they often don't have a lot of autonomy or power. So that sense of ownership, wonderful. So Jamie, you've worked in school age programs for a number of years. We were just speaking to that before we jumped on. I believe you said 15 years.
Yes.
A little while. So I'm curious, what inspired you to become a school age educator?
Honestly, I'd have to say the magic of those in-between moments. I've always loved the quirky and creative and sometimes chaotic, I'm not going to lie, that energy that school agers bring. And they're forming their identities at this age. They're testing boundaries and they're developing these deep thoughts about the world. And I wanted to be that someone who met them where they're at, who honored this growing independence and who offered them a space to belong. Plus, they make me laugh every single day. I work as a supervisor now, but I spend my mornings in the before school class, and it's literally my favorite part of the day.
Yeah, I totally hear you. I know I moved from early years in the UK into play work. And to start off with, I was like, what do you do with these school ages? But actually, when I started to work with school ages, all of those things that you were, you know, speaking to, and definitely that humor, that laughter that comes through. So
I know that you've worked with preschoolers and you've worked with school ages. So could you just share some of your thoughts on how programming for school ages differs from programming for, say, younger children?
Yeah, absolutely. And honestly, I don't think it does differ. I think that the best educators put as much care and passion into the programming of school agers that anyone would do that in, sorry, as the same would do in a preschool program or in a toddler infant program, because they require that passion. They it's more intricate. Bear with me. In a sense, because you can use less words when you're putting invitations out. You don't have to explain as much. You can just see where it goes. But at the same time, you're in this unique position where they can tell you exactly what they're interested in. You can have these great conversations, and then all you have to do is bring it in and see how they interact with it and how they explore with it. And I guess that's where it would differ, is that you have so much more opportunity to bring in invitations and provocations and these interests to expand on them than you do with preschoolers. But I would challenge anyone that says it's different to just you're all you're doing is you're being inclusive. You're changing the gears and scaffolding the activities to meet the needs of the children in this range of 4 to 12. But provide that passion, provide that thought that you would into any age group.
Wonderful. So just following on from that, are there any tools, tips, or strategies that you could share with our listeners?
Yeah, first and foremost, I would say that programming for them is less about the instruction and it's more about the facilitation. So being there and asking those questions of wonder. You're a mentor, you're a coach, you're a collaborator. It's about negotiating the ideas and supporting their leadership in it. So giving them the floor to make those decisions or just to lead activities or to come up with ideas and following their lead in that. And then giving them the space to try and fail safely. I think one thing that's great about school age is that it's okay if you fail, and it's okay if you're trying science experiments, or it's okay if they're trying to build something or if they're trying to climb a tree and they don't get it right away. It's okay, because that failing that they're doing, as long as it's safe, that failing that they're doing is how they're going to learn to push those boundaries and how they're going to learn to build those confidence. And honestly, they can tell if you're not authentic. They will call you out. They know if you don't want to be there. So making sure that you are being honest with them and making sure that you are giving them what they need in that moment. We talk a lot about equity in our programs and how it's not always about fairness. It's about equity. It's about meeting people where they are and giving them what they need to get to that next level. And school age is no different, because there's such a huge age gap that it's reframing your thinking that it's a chore to find what each kid's needs, and it's more of getting to know them.
Yeah, that definitely, that authenticity, they know if you're not being authentic, definitely. And I love
Yes.
that you spoke to, it's okay to fail. I forget, and I always butcher this phrase, but there's something along the lines of, I haven't done it wrong 3,000 times. I've found 3,000 different ways to do
Yes.
it. So definitely from
Yes, and
us.
that's literally it. Like there's so many ways that people will fail, but some of the best things in life happen because people failed and it didn't go the right way the first time. And that's what we want to do. We want these kids to be out of the box thinkers. We want these kids to grow up in a world where they challenge the status quo, where they challenge things when they don't agree with it, and where they ask questions and they want their why. And that's what we want, because we need this in our world right now.
Wow, fabulous. I couldn't agree with you more. So, just following on a little bit from that, are there any go-to resources that you use that you would like to share with us?
Absolutely. So I'll talk about a couple like basic ones, but then the main one I'll save for the end of this because it's really good and some people don't utilize it the best of their ability. So first, any loose parts, recycled materials. This is gonna sound crazy, but ChatGPT, if people aren't using AI in early child education, and I'm not talking about going and cheating in your ECE programs. What I'm talking about is utilizing ChatGPT or AI to help you come up with these great ideas that push the boundaries for children. It is a wonderful resource now. And then your basics like Pinterest. And then also, I always have board games because children learn a lot through board games. And that's where your literacy skills can come in and your math skills can come in. And then children's books like it's like the Big Book of Science or the Ripley's Believe It or Not books, because a lot of great questions come when they're looking at those books. One of the big ones is your community. I think that community means a lot to our programs and that we don't always utilize it to the best of our capabilities because we sometimes get focused on bringing in like the EMTs and the police officers, but we don't always think about bringing in the grocery store clerk or the hairdresser or the doctor or the custodians who really see the day-to-day in a different way. And I think we can utilize those. And then also like your local library or museums or community centers, anything like that. And then last but certainly not least, and this is a big one, definitely the children. They're my number one resource. They are what's relevant and what's exciting. And each day is different because of what they bring to the table.
I love that. Your number one resource is the
Yeah.
children. So, and you finished up with
Yeah.
that one. So that's great. Definitely, yeah, that we don't forget that our children are.
Yeah, they are at this amazing place in their life when they're in these programs that they can tell us exactly what they want or what they're curious about, or listening to their conversations will inspire that spark of interest. I have a quick story if you don't mind.
Yeah, please.
So we had our licensing lady in probably my first year here. Well, I was doing both the after school program and being a supervisor part time. And so the licensing person's here, and it was fine. Everything's going well. Whatever, we're ch chatting. But you know, everyone feels a little bit like, oh my gosh, licensing here. Make sure everything's okay. And one of the kids are like, can we pet the fish? And I was like, oh, and maybe normally my first thought would be like, no, you can't pet a fish. Why would you pet a fish? The fish is in water. But because licensing was there, I feel like I was a little bit more like, well, why would I just say no to them? What is the harm in petting the fish? So I'm like, actually, I don't know if we can pet a fish. We'd have to look it up. So then we did some research to see if we could pet a fish. And apparently Google hates me and was like, yeah, you can pet fish. Fish actually can be trained to like jump through hoops and do these things in the water. And I was like, absolutely not. There's no way this is happening. But okay. So all of the kids got to pet the fish that day and wash their hands. And if I didn't let down that initial guard that was like, no, why would you pet a fish? We wouldn't have learned that. And we wouldn't have been able to pet the fish. Now it came and it went. The kids pet the fish. They did it for about 3 days where they were super excited to pet the fish. The fish probably didn't like it the best, but you know, we washed our hands after, it was great. And then we went on to another interest. But these moments where we would normally just say like no, ask ourselves, why are we saying no? Is this something we have to say no to? And then push the boundary a little.
Yeah, great. And that kind of reminded me of that co-learning approach that how this
Yes.
learning happens speaks to.
Absolutely. And you are in this incredible role. You are a co-learner. I learn so much every day because I let myself learn. I let myself get excited.
Yeah, and that change that we've had over maybe the last decade of not needing to know all the answers, and there's no right and wrong, but how do we learn together.
Yeah, absolutely.
So as children get older, they develop that growing need for autonomy, independence. You spoke to it a little earlier. So how do you meet the growing needs for children for autonomy and independence in your school age programs?
Oh, great question. I would have to say a lot of it's around letting them lead, inviting them to lead, whether it's planning that activity or mentoring a peer. or helping solve a like a problem or a challenge. I also build choices into almost everything we do. We have a free flow snack when children come after school. They don't have to sit down and have snack right away. They want to hang out solo for a while. We still have a cozy corner and a spot where kids can go and do that. They want to do their own comic club or a build. We're making we have a challenge right now making race cars out of recycled materials, and they got to pick their teams. They got to lead with the captains and draw names out of a hat, and they did all of that themselves. And it's respecting that autonomy and building trust, and that trust that you build then builds engagement. And I another part of autonomy that I want to touch on is that confidence building. And this is such a tricky age for kids because their bodies are changing as they get older. And in before and after school, you see it. Like, it's at, whether at school they go through different grades while this is happening, and they don't always have the same teacher. Well, at before and after school, sometimes they have the same person, and you see these changes, and you're there, and you're that safe person, and sometimes you're the one that they talk to about all the things that they're wondering about and curious about, and just being open and honest, and ensuring that you are that safe place, and that you're providing materials, whether it's a daily affirmation card, or whether it's how you talk to them, that you're using the power of your voice and your power of being a mentor to them to the good, and that you're building those confidence skills with them, because the world is such a hard place now, especially for kids, and you want them to be confident in how they the choices they make, in how they dress and how they act and how they be themselves.
Yeah, that safe space, safe place.
Yeah.
You spoke to that earlier as well. So yeah, thinking about that concept and also respect. Often people think that because you're an adult, you deserve respect, but actually we have to earn that respect.
Absolutely. And there's a difference between being respectful and being compliant. And I think a lot of people get stuck on this hill. And I mean, it really is. It's that, which hill do you want to die on? Which hill are you fighting for? And this is not the hill. When children question why a rule is a certain way, or when children question why you're saying no to something, it doesn't mean that they're being disrespectful. It that means that they're trying to figure out the reasoning behind the decisions. And I think making sure we understand that not everything that we're meeting is disobeying, quote unquote. I guess you can't see me because we're on a podcast, of course, but air quotes. Like, wait, there's usually, first of all, there's usually a reason for a misbehavior. There's something underneath relying that's coming out in the form of misbehavior. And not children, I don't children aren't inherently bad. They're not inherently out there trying to make your life like complicated, but they want to know. They want to ask these questions. They want to know why things are in place. And sometimes it's good to be reminded of the why, because you can decide then if it's a rule that's worth it, or if it's something that's maybe you're shielding yourself for that, and the tough conversations that might come around it, rather than a good reason to not be doing something.
Yeah, definitely. And that's kind of thinking about how we give children a voice. So thinking about linking into the UN Convention on the Rights of the Child,
Yes.
Article 12, affirming children's right to express their views and their opinions, which is very reflective of what you were saying, which was thinking about. So yeah, I guess so. I'm curious. So you've kind of spoken to how you afford children a voice within your programs. Are there any other ways that you, any other strategies, ways that you utilize within your program, within your work, within your practice to afford children a voice?
Yeah, so first and foremost, we have the UN Rights of the Child posted, and we refer to them often because I want kids to know that they have rights, and I want them to understand that they're people, that they are counted in this glorious world as someone that has rights. Maybe not everyone feels that way, but we're lucky there, I guess. But also, like, I have a suggestion box. Well, what I call it is a I need you box. So what it is a fancy Kleenex box that I that I taped up and made look pretty. And it is shut. And there's a notepad by it and a pen. And there's a little saying that goes with it that about, this is an I need you box, whether you think you can't come to me and talk to me about it, whether it's something you want in the program or whether something's happening to you, like you have a conflict with a peer or something, you can write it down and put it in the box. And then I'll address it later when it's just you and me. So you don't have to feel like feel like you have to tell me in person, because sometimes even if we are that safe place, it's hard to tell people things. And I want them to feel that they can do that. And that they have a voice. And sometimes it's hard for children to express themselves. Now, obviously we have some younger kids that takes a little bit of working with the writing to do, but also some decoding on my part. But even when I see kids go over there and write, it tells me that there's something that they're needing and they're missing. And then that might give me an opportunity to talk to them later and bring it up. Giving monthly town hall chats. So once a month, we come together and we meet in both programs, one in the morning program, one in the afternoon program. And we talk about what the children want to see in the upcoming month. If there was something that didn't go well, if there's something that went really well, or something that they were like, I don't want to do that ever again. Don't, why did you bring that in? And they have that ability to talk about it. And then also we touch a little bit on project-based learning and what direction the kids want to see. So in these town hall meetings, if there's something big that they want to work on, we would talk about it there.
Wow. Some great strategies to empower the children within your program there. I need you box. I like that. I've just made a little note of that one. That really, because often we just call it like a suggestions box or whatever. Just makes it a little bit more personal. Okay, so shifting gears a little bit. There are some unique and wonderful differences in working in school age programs and with school age children. But there are also some challenges. What would you say are some common challenges of working with school ages and school age programs, and how have you overcome them?
Oh, this is good. Yes, there's definitely some challenges. First and foremost, big emotions in big bodies. School agers are still developing these self-regulation skills that we know to be true in preschool and toddler kids. So they're more advanced obviously than the preschool and toddler children, but they're still developing these regulation skills, and we have to remember that because they don't always want to admit it, but emotions run high in these programs. I've definitely overcome this by focusing on the connection before correction part, that building relationships that are rooted in mutual respect. And then also boredom can become a behavior issue. I do believe strongly that we live in a society that sometimes it seems like boredom is not okay, but I think boredom is okay. I think that children can do great things in boredom, but being bored the entire time they're in here and not having enough things in the classroom to utilize would be the issue. So I just want to touch on that for a second. What I'm saying is, if we are just, say our programs are in the gym, because sometimes we don't have our own classroom. Sometimes we share a gym or share a classroom and we just bring in a cart. If there's not enough materials or not enough stimulation for the children to create or explore, then that could become a problem. We have to have things for them to explore or give them opportunities to explore in order for them to get engaged. But it's such a tricky thing, because you don't want to provide too much, and you don't have to tell them how to use it. So I think as long as you're offering materials, what I do, as long as I offer materials that can be interchanged or switched out, and I'm not policing on where these materials are going, then if they come to me saying they're bored, it's fine, something to do. But if I'm not making the effort in offering materials, if there's only like a board game and crayons and books available, then obviously I'm not doing my due diligence as a teacher. So I make sure that there's layers of engagement and that I let children be a part of the solution when conflict or disengagement arises. And I also play with them. So getting a board game out, if someone's telling me that they're bored, I'll pull a board game out and I'll start playing it. Or I'll get a book about facts and I'll start reading it out loud and see if they want to come join me.
Yes, so I love that piece again, involving the children in the solution. And you also spoke to that balance as well, not having too much, not having having enough. So something that I often hear from school age educators is that all the children want to do is to play on their devices. Is this something that you have come up against? And if so, what strategies did you use and find successful?
No, that's great. Yes, I definitely, I know children want to play with their video games. I also know that sometimes children come in with this frame of mind that they can't wait to go home and play with their video games. But we do not have devices here for the most part. There is, it's that medium because I do, or that middle ground, I do see some benefit in it. We have an iPad because we run like our attendance and stuff off of an app. So we have an iPad, and the iPad is used for research only. So if a kid has a question or we're wondering something, we'll do it together and find out. Sometimes in the morning we do the jokes of the day, and we Google some fun kids jokes or fun kids riddles, and we try to solve them together. But that's about the extent of our digital devices. I did have a family come in and ask, to do homework with their child, like their child has homework. And I do think there's a place for homework too, whether or not I believe in homework or anything is another topic. But I think that parents do sign up and that it's hard for them to come home from work and then do homework, especially if they're picking their kids up at 6 o'clock. So that's definitely allowed. And if they have a Chromebook, again, they can bring it in to do their homework on, but it's monitored. They're not just sitting on the Chromebook playing games or whatever. It's all about that responsibility and providing them with the responsibility. But we don't offer them any electronics to go on.
That kind of reminds me of something I came across a little while about when they talk about that tech diet. So, what is the technology? What are you using it? Why are you using it? That good, that bad, but just thinking about that why behind it. So we're coming towards the end of our time together. So if there are people who are listening to this podcast, who are maybe considering a move to work with the older children with the school ages, is there any advice that you would give them?
Do it. Okay. Jump in. Honestly, it's wild, it's rewarding, and it's put your whole heart in it. This is such an incredible place to be. Be ready to grow alongside the kids, laugh often, and be able to think on your feet. Honestly, my advice would be to build those strong relationships first, to not take things personally. And I say that very cautiously because children notice things, and school agers are not afraid to tell you if you aren't wearing the right color, or if you wear makeup and your makeup's on the wrong way, or if you look different. They're sure to point it out. So just don't take it personally, and use those as opportunities to a learning experience to talk about what's appropriate and not appropriate to say to people, especially when they're tired at 7 o'clock in the morning. But be curious and not controlling, and above all, let the kids show you who they are and what they need, because they'll teach you more than any textbook that you read, more than any book, more than any webinar that you can take. They will teach you that. And I guess that's it. Take that away. Take the end of That's all.
So if I didn't already have a background working with school ages, I would be definitely wanting to jump in there. I think I'd get myself some broad shoulders first, and then I would be right in there.
Yes. Yeah, broad shoulders are a necessity, but it's so worth it. And those conversations don't happen all the time, but just it they can be fun. The kids, it's a lot of fun. And coming around summer camp, like in summer, it's just such an incredible time to be in these programs.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. So, thanks very much for your time. And finally, is there anything else that you would like to share with our listeners?
Oh, thank you. I do have one final thought. And then I'll tell you where to find me. So one final thought is that school age care matters. I want anyone who's listening to this to understand that I see you and that so many people see you. It's not extra, it's not just care. It's not that in between what children do when their parents aren't home yet. It's a vital time in a child's day, and that can either uplift them or deflate them. And when we invest in these thoughtful and engaging and responsive programming, we help shape these confident, creative, and resilient humans. And what could be more important than that, or more fun?
I couldn't agree with you more, Jamie. Such an important role that our school age educators play in the whole eco system. So, Jamie, thank you so much for sharing your time and your insights with everything around school aged. And thank you, everybody, for listening. It's been a wonderful conversation. Jamie Lee, thank you so much for sharing your passion around working with school-aged children. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Aw, thank you so much for having me, and thank you for all the work you do for our educators.
Wraps up our conversation on all things school age. A big thank you for tuning into this podcast episode, and for Jamie for sharing her passion, wisdom, and experience with us. It was an absolute pleasure connecting with Jamie to discuss all things school age. Please share your thoughts on this podcast in the comments section. And to find out more about Jamie's work with school age educators, check out the links at the bottom of this page.